Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today we're joined by David Supple. We're looking at an awesome new property. I don't know, how do you want to introduce this thing?
So I own an architecture and renovation company in Boston and had been looking for a while for a property that could be my home, my office, and a small farm. So this is what I ended up with. And Brent and Jackson were gracious enough to come out and give me pointers and amazing history of the property. The original owner and builder was one of the original 77 Minutemen who faced the British in the first Battle of the Revolution, Deacon Nathan Reed. And so anyway, I'm like super excited. I close in a couple months and I'm gonna, yeah, so.
Well, that's so a short story. One of the things that's hard is or interesting, maybe I should say it that way, is trying to figure out when this was built. And something we had talked about, it being a federal house, which would be, and it just hit me when you were saying that, a federal house would be before the American Revolution.
1773 is supposedly.
When this was built?
Yeah.
So basically the Georgian period, okay, lasts into the 1780s, and there's overlap, okay? So neoclassicism, what we would call our federal style in America, really, I don't find strong evidence of it until 1780s, 1790s, sometimes into the 1820s, 1830s. So now I'm sitting there going, okay, we're saying federal based on time period, but it's probably more of a Georgian house.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That front entryway is federal, right there.
Nope, that's been added. That's not new.
The portico, I do believe, was added, and
we've got a Greek Revival entrance underneath that. So
neoclassical is what they called it in England.
Mm-hmm. Right, Adam-esque, right, Robert Adams, yes, but it was an Adam-esque, we call it federal.
Okay, yeah,
after the Federalist Papers, and so, but you don't, anyway, I'm kind of side rabbit here, but this is an interesting thing. David and I have known each other for a long time. Remodeler's Advantage, I gave a talk there 15 years ago. Peer networking group, we could have a discussion about that. Very valuable in my career.
Me too.
Very valuable as far as teaching me about business, teaching me about how to get better at what I do. I tend to be the artist, kind of want to build things beautifully, not really always chasing dollars, and the money doesn't matter to me as much. And so Remodeler's Advantage was a great thing for me because it taught me how to be a businessman.
Yeah. Oh, so you were a member for, you weren't, yeah, at the time you did,
yeah,
the talk.
Yeah.
But you had been prior.
Right.
Yeah. No, this was done wonders for me. And then I kind of didn't follow you. Then I found you just, you know, on the Build Show, yeah, and your passion for craft, and I've been following you since then. And you've been an inspiration to me. Like what you're talking about resonates with me so much. I am so passionate about the short story of me is I went to school to be an architect.
Right.
I got out of school. I started practicing, and I was like, how can this be that I'm telling somebody what to build and how to build, but I've never built anything in my life?
Yeah.
And around that time, someone told me, well, you know, the derivation of the word architect is actually master builder.
Sure.
Which you talk about all the time.
Yeah.
And I've done a deep dive into the history, and for millennia. From
well, let's talk, you know, about that. Yeah. Let's go there, because, yeah, the big picture thing that you kind of added some texture to it. But you know, the first architecture school is MIT.
That's right.
In 1881.
That's
something
right.
Like that.
Exactly right.
And then Columbia was another one. So there's,
started by the AIA.
Licenseship, okay, was kind of a big deal. And what my view of it was that I saw guys like who's the grandfather of it, of the AIA?
Thomas Ustick Walter was
not Walter.
Davis, Richard Upjohn.
Yeah. So
he was the original president.
So there's these guys who were pushing for, like, if you, like, I've talked about architects, early architects, pre-Civil War, they really didn't make much money as architects, right? Charles Bulfinch was notoriously poor. He was the architect in Boston, did the state capitol. He made his money as a city manager. He didn't make his money as an architect. And so who's the guy? Latrobe, who came over. He had been
from
trained.
From England, yeah.
He had been trained in England.
Haviland, Strickland were trained by him. They were in the, yep, original group. So there's, In 1830, if you don't mind.
No.
I've done a deep dive into this. In 1836, the American Institution of Architects was formed. There's about 20 members. I've looked at all their history, all their past.
And Asher Benjamin's part
of that. Asher Benjamin, others.
Ithiel Towne.
Yeah. 18 of the 20 that I could research came from the trades. They were either apprentice mason. They were, that's where they came from. And their stated purpose was to get a higher status, because at that time it came from England. They could not be gentlemen because of their affiliation with manual labor. That was a no-no. In England's census, you could be a gentleman, but you couldn't be if you were in the trades. Yeah. That was like, no. So that was really, was the licensure thing came like towards the 1900s, around the 1900s. Originally, it was just like, let's form a group, let's differentiate ourselves. You know, they wanted to be on par with their clients. And so that group didn't last, but then reformed in like 1857 as the current AIA. And they recognized that older group. And Richard Upjohn was the president. He was a carpenter. He came from England. He was a cabinet maker.
And one of the early guys who did Washington, D.C., Walters was one of those, and that were a part of that team, right? Yeah. And then I think it's fascinating. One, I didn't know the piece that they were trying to gain credibility, would you say it that way?
Yeah, that was their purpose, was to elevate their status because they were the best, and they
were. Well, but do you think that they weren't able to charge, they weren't able to make a living without that kind of separation?
Yeah, I think they did very well for themselves. Like, it did work. But the thing that they never envisioned, they were still master builders. They still took ownership for the execution of the projects. Yeah. The death blow came with switching an apprenticeship system, which you're going through now, to a university curriculum, which I came out of.
Right.
And then you had generally,
you think that was, the
that,
death
was
blow.
That was the death blow.
Because when you say death blow, you mean a separation of architect,
the architect
and
stopped
builder.
Being able to be responsible for the execution of a project.
Yeah. And you mean like actual boots on the ground, like the architect's guys are the ones building the project.
Or at least supervising. Mean? Like, these guys wouldn't, you know, they came up as an apprentice, a journeyman, a master.
Yeah.
That was true with the Egyptians, with the Greeks in the Middle Ages. And then those masters weren't necessarily doing all the work, right? But they were like,
they went through the steps.
They were controlling it. Okay. So that held true throughout history up until that point. And it's been made to appear like it was always separated.
Right.
Well, I think what's fascinating is that your dismay, whatever the right word is, of getting out of architecture school and going, I don't know how the hell to build, and kind of looking around, because I've had three or four architects from Notre Dame come and work for us. And one of the reasons from one guy in particular was he went to work for architecture firms and realized they didn't know how to build. And he wanted to understand how things were crafted, how things were put together, so he could become a better architect, master builder.
Both of you guys have said, don't know how to build. Do you mean like you've never done the experiential like job of putting something together?
It's not a requirement.
Like,
they have like token classes you can take, like design build classes, but you don't have to. I never did.
Okay.
And so, it's like I give this analogy. Imagine a chef who never cooked a thing in their life, but their job was to
memorize recipes,
like tell people what to cook and recipes and write recipes, like, you know, they'd be lacking.
So that's what they did.
That's what happened to the architect. That's what happened to the architect over time. And it's, you know, since the universities write the books, I'm blowing this up. Like I'm like writing a book now that's, it really is the truth.
Yeah.
And it's documented. It's like, you can look for yourself. And they started to like twist a little bit the truth and make it appear like the architect was always separate
like
from the
guy.
Builder.
We could probably spend the whole episode talking about this, because what's fascinating to me is if you look at, because I talk about a lot about Levittown, and especially after World War II, and the separation that happens between, you know, architects in the 20s could design, you know, a high rise, they could also design a house. Architects after that time, the residential designs kind of poo-pooed. I don't know whether you found that in school.
So the
good design in housing, one reason why houses are ugly today is because there's not a good designer involved.
Yeah. All issues in our
that.
Industry, I believe, are from the separation.
Yeah.
like Frank Lloyd Wright was, he actually had, he was apprenticed.
Yeah.
He grew up on a farm. He threw his hammer and ran away because he was, they were having to build so much. I've written an article about this. And so there was, but by the time you got to the 1950s, there was enough generational separation. That's where the advent of the construction manager was invented. Because from what I see, owners were like, they can't do it anymore.
Right.
Like, we need to invent a new position that's going to be responsible, that knows, you know, these things that the architect had lost touch with.
Well, on the
sorry, before you jump onto another note, your story kind of continues because you left architecture school and then you went and decided to go build, right?
Yeah, like
you learned.
Yeah. Guys have inspired me because I worked in a design studio for about 3 years.
Yeah.
And I was just insecure, deficient. I was pretending.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do that. So I went and I worked for carpenters, for builders,
yeah,
just to intentionally fill that void. I got let go.
Yeah.
After about a year.
Yeah.
So I didn't really, I have some. And so one thing I told you guys is I hope to, I have two younger kids now. I hope to attend North Bennett with one of them.
Yeah.
And fill that void further.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about that, like, did that change your perception afterwards when you were like,
I was so thirsty for it.
Sounds like he already knew that he was deficient.
Yeah.
I was starved for it. So I just ate it up. And even when I started my company, when I got fired, I just started my company.
Right.
And I still like did all the work.
Yeah.
I just, cause I was looking to fill that void.
And you feel like it made you a better designer?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That's really
cool. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I've told anecdotally the story of the architect friend of mine who, after school, went onto a job site and saw the studs in the wall behind the sheetrock and goes, oh, those are the X's I've been drawing into these plans,
yeah,
right?
No, it's all just two dimensions.
Yeah,
it's
just really didn't, like, understand how it was put together.
I had a coming of age in my studio. I was at the studio, somebody called in from a job site. They wanted me to explain something in a drawing. I didn't know what it was.
Right.
It was just lines on paper. That was like my job, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like,
interesting.
And he wasn't happy. And I was just like, and I wanted nothing more than to help him.
Right.
You know, but I couldn't.
So.
Yeah. That's so crazy.
It's,
thanks for like letting us behind the curtains with that. Like, I feel like that's
something. Yeah, you know, I watch you guys all the time and it's right there. You guys, it's like the elephant in the room for me.
Yeah.
And you guys set such a great model of this integrated approach that I'm really trying to bring back awareness of, because it's actually the natural approach.
Yeah. Well, when you look at like soffits and fascias and knowing like the SIMO was originally the gutter and like there's a purpose behind all these parts, they become less like things on a page in a drawing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Cause when I was looking at some of that stuff, I was like, why do we need all these different like lines and why is there a, you know, but it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask a question now?
What do you think?
So I think, you know, if you look at Mies van der Rohe, you look at Frank Lloyd Wright, and I think the modernists are, they look at Frank Lloyd Wright, or they look at these modernists and go, that's who we want to be.
Yeah.
But they don't have his training.
No.
And
Walter
so,
Gropius is, the Bauhaus was a trade school.
True. Mm. And so if you, it was an art school.
Well, it was based on, I'll show you what I have on this.
Well, if you look at what they show off, the books that are written about, they did a lot of...
That's current people?
No, this was historic stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I can show you a diagram. You picked metal, glass,
that's interesting.
Ceramic. You picked a trade, and you focused on that.
I guess my point was, is that you have guys like Frank Lloyd Wright, Mies, and those other guys who are trained as classicists, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And then took that and did really creative modern things with it. And I don't think modern architects, and you can speak to this, are able to design as well because that classicism is so pushed away that the human scale, all those other things that make buildings beautiful is not there.
I completely agree. And that's really how I found you. It wasn't actually the videos, actually it was your articles on classicism because I was doing a deep dive into that. And I found your material very palatable and just understandable. I think that, you know, for millennia, design, theory, these things were interwoven into the trades. Mm. It was like forms were natural, that were inherently beautiful.
Yeah.
They knew how to do them. They were like, oh yeah, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
When the separation occurred, the trades became order takers and like lesser. And now the design theory was just belonged to this other group.
Yeah.
you know, and I've heard you talk about it, but the principles of, you know, classicism that had held true for thousands of thousands, and because it's inherent, it's based on nature. Mm-hmm. It's, they're inherently beautiful. I think those things got lost, definitely by the builder. Yeah. Like, that's why, you know, you have this degraded, like, mansion, you know, yeah, that's just like, they're just picking pieces. There's like really no design theory.
It's a mess. But, so we could go there. Jackson would quit interrupting me. We could really spend a lot of time there. I do want to talk about this house. Okay, this is really cool.
Yeah, I want your feedback.
I would say it's a Georgian period house, not a federal period house. Because it's 1773?
1773, if that's accurate.
Sure, yeah.
I kind of like that because that was a year before the first battle.
Yeah.
And that's what a historian documented, but
interesting.
Yeah.
So I would have just said if it's 1790s, 1800s, I'd say it's a federal period house. I think it's a Georgian period house.
Okay.
And so you've got the five bay form, right? It'd be interesting, and we'll go around this other side and look at it. You actually see the strong Greek revival, and we'll go inside and check it out. Obviously, windows are not original, right? And we'll see those from the inside.
The roof is, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of original sheathing, right? There's timber frame. It's a weird house inside. We can go look at it. Jackson was looking at, showing us some of the studs been re-sawn.
The weirdness is a good thing because it becomes this mystery that you get to unfold. How did they take this and change it from one thing to the next?
I mean, there's almost some peeling back like that could show some original marks. I don't know. The house was originally here, got moved back.
Yeah.
I would be curious to know how much this house got changed.
Yeah.
Right? Just, I think a lot, especially after seeing all the studs and everything inside.
Yeah. The form of it, at least this plan I have from like 1920s, I think it was an insurance plan, it has the same form as it did then.
Yeah.
So, but I do know in 1830 something, it was apparently changed to a Greek revival. That style was in vogue.
Okay, well, let's go around and look at that because that's pretty cool.
Cool.
When we're on this side of it, I see the Greek revival that you were talking to me about, right? And just so that people can see this, you see the temple form, you see the wide corner boards that go up to a pilaster at the top. That molding on this side, different from the left side, is a classic Greek revival molding to me. That the capital of this pilaster here.
Okay.
And so, you know, here's, you think it's 1830s, you know, which is a little bit early for the Greek revival, but certainly it was part of that. I would say that it starts about that time. We'll go look at the front door. The front door cap, also strongly Greek revival. Some of the moldings inside. So, you know, we had this conversation a little bit, but let's talk about it more. You know, you're going to restore this house, and you were thinking, I want to go back Greek revival. I think you could do either, but...
Yeah. My thought on it was just to roll with the kind of patriotism and the history of the home.
Yeah.
And, you know, being who the original owner was, and he built the home, one of the original Minutemen, and then the Greek revival style, as I understand it, was a very, like, patriotic. It was called the national style because of America's affiliation, you know, democracy, Greece, and so I feel like that kind of is part of the narrative. I'm taking cues from you a little bit in that of just, you know, following that narrative, but I'm open to otherwise. I'm gonna have this, you know, we have 128 right here. This is literally the off ramp, so I'm gonna have a big American flag here. It's kind of the gateway to Lexington and its history, and
really cool.
I'm going with that. So,
well, I mean, the reason I was pushing back on you because I think Lexington Minuteman, this house should be Georgian, you know, in that period. But I love, Greek revival is one of my favorite. And so I could go either way.
You're pleasing in both ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Favorite style or?
I think you do have some challenges as far as you might have bitten off more than you can chew because you got.
Cut that. My CFO would agree with you.
There's a lot of house here and like those windows, like that frame on those windows, okay? And that then the trim around those windows is really pretty, very typical for a Georgian or federal house.
Oh, okay.
That thicker windowsill, like two and a half inch windowsill, the architrave that goes around the outside, even the way they've cut it in with the banding that goes across the back, that to me is really an early, you know, that's not even Greek revival. I think that's still that Georgian federal thing.
Wouldn't Georgian be plank framed windows?
Yeah, and you might have had a bigger header going across. Right. I was just in Connecticut this weekend for a wedding, and they had the big paneled timber going over top of the window. So I say all that because, you know, if you dig into that Greek Revival style and you want to be Greek Revival, you might, you know, it's just more, it's just more work, right?
Yeah,
and so, you know, I just think that,
I appreciate that.
You know, I just think that,
I do have the idea of having Shutters 2 with Minutemen in them.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And so your office will be the barn, which has been changed up. Like I don't find the barn as interesting historically, although there are old timbers in there.
Yeah.
I would, this is where, you know, the first things I always tell clients when we're working on an old house is get pictures, find as much historical documentation as you can.
Because I have a picture of the barn with a cupola, so I plan to put that back. I plan to do an addition that connects them. Another inspired by you, having my office there, a lot of books, and a neat kind of transitional space.
Because I think one of the other challenges you have is even going inside is just how Greek Revival-y do you want it? Mm-hmm. And so just how far do you want to carry that look, or is it just going to be on the outside?
It's really on the outside. Like inside, I'm not going to have as much of necessity for that. I actually like a lot of the additions that are done in England, where the form is classical, but you can see
still
it's
contemporary
not.
Inside,
but so I do. I am thinking with something like that to connect it, where it looks at it, it fits, it's harmonious, but it's not period accurate per se.
Sure.
And I feel like that's an opportunity for us to kind of show, because we do historical restoration, but we also do, you know, we're really client driven in terms of their aesthetic and needs. So
well, let's go inside, look at, I mean, it's, there's gutted on the inside, so we'll be able to see the downstairs, a lot of the woodwork. And
on these windows, because they're not plank framed, doesn't that push it a little bit later than Georgian to federal?
Plank framed, what do you mean plank framed?
Like where you've got the window, you push it in and you drive the spikes into the side of the window held up. Like that's a lot more of the Georgian style windows.
Well, let's go look at it.
Okay.
Because I know what you're saying, but it's hard to tell with that framing inside what's going on.
Okay,
so this is the frame I was talking about that you've got actually an architrave right here, and this is where I would be looking at this actual shape of this molding here. And that actually looks kind of Greek Revival-y to me.
Okay.
So it's curious. I don't know what to think. The Greek Revival buildings I was just looking at, and if it's 1830s, maybe it's transitional, so you're seeing a little bit of combination of either one. But the Greek Revival form typically is a wide flat board and then a bigger board that was often paneled on the top. The other thing about the Greek Revival windows is they were oftentimes bigger on the first floor, and you'd have bigger panes of glass as the glass technology got better. Obviously, these are, you know, aluminum inserts or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And we'll look at it on the inside. You actually see where the weight pockets are and how this is all put together. So I say all that to just say confusing, you know, I'm not sure it's super clear what's going on, but this is a more Georgian or you know, colonial form than it is Greek Revival. Mm. What's interesting is that as we go inside and we can just look from here, but you know, that molding, that capital right there is more typical, right? Because you have the big wide flat board, you have the necking piece, and then that shape of that molding. So me, I'm sitting here, one, I would love to see pictures, but two, I would love to strip this piece away and see what's going on. This looks like a 1920s piece added on.
Yeah, definitely not original. The entasis on the pilaster, is that common for, right?
It does.
Is that common for Greek Revival or?
No, yes, okay. No.
I mean, we work on homes that are like really a lot of revival, and it's incredible. Could this just be kind of somebody's interpretation of?
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And so, you know, that, I mean, and I think what makes America unique and great is you do see these forms of houses, you know, built by, you know, uneducated, you know, think about Asher Benjamin's, the title of his book, A Country Builder's Assistant, right?
Yeah.
And so he was helping guys who were building out in the country who didn't really have access to the pattern books and stuff like that.
So I'm gonna send this to Austin, but at that time of Asher Benjamin, if you look in an English dictionary, you look up architect and you look up builder, they're synonyms. Actually use the other word to define the other one.
Huh.
So that's the thing. Like,
what period was that?
Up until the really the end of the 1800s.
Really?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I have. Cool. I'll send you the Webster's Dictionary.
It's, that's
so
a cool
like
fact.
That's who they were talking to. Yeah. So like every time I listen to you guys, I'm like, say it. Say it. You know, because you're talking about it. It's right. Like that for me, it's the elephant in the room, and it's like we need to increase awareness on this because it was never meant to be. And you guys are helping bring it back together. Your content is just naturally that, because you are, you know, I know people call you an architect all the freaking time because you, your skill set and your ability is, you know, is so
what
incredible.
A master builder used to
have. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that's really powerful. Well, but you can be responsible for it. You can tell them the cost.
What I usually tell people is that Benjamin Buckland, all those guys were my heroes because they were the master builder, right? Yeah, they were the guys who could craft, who could build, who could design, and do all of that. And I think that's what I want all builders to be able to do.
The design component is really the thing that most builders don't have that you bring to the table
at such a high degree. I think it intimidates them, right? I think that design piece, they go, I don't want to do that.
It's not my job. I'm an order taker.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm so sick of that. I hate that.
It degrades the trades. The trades were always inherently respected and had that theory in the woof and warp of it. And it was kind of like ripped off.
Yeah. If I hear one more builder say, just tell me what you want, I'll put it on. Just like, that is my pet
peeve. It's like
the
status quo. I respect you guys so much because you're going up against the status quo.
Yeah.
So I know you get a bunch of flack for it because it's not the status quo, right?
Right.
Some of the comments are hilarious.
Yeah, but it's like the change needs to happen. And you guys set an incredible model and you've been a inspiration for me, and so I'm excited.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah,
that. You guys definitely. I don't know, the dynamic between you guys is hilarious. I don't know if they play all the like bickering and like whatever going on, but you've brought like just your enthusiasm and interest. It's like it's really a great dynamic you guys have.
I was telling you off camera, I used to hate what he did. I used to sweep his shop, and I was like, I'm never doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Now here I am, loving it. I'm like texting him, like, hey, did you know this? He's like, yeah.
It's fun. Our techs have gotten a lot more fun. Okay, we're going to go into this front room here, check out the things that make it confusing but also fun. Come on. So here's what I find fascinating here, and Jackson was helping me see it with some fresh eyes because he's, you know, studying this stuff. I haven't studied a New England building like this in 35 years.
You can say it. I'm better than you.
Sharper.
Anyway, what you're looking at is you're looking at a combination of stick framing, right? You're looking at timber framing. You're looking at wide planks like these boards or the sheathing that are, you know, 15, 18, 20 inches. You're looking at the lath and plaster, which is sawn lath. You've got, you know, sawn timbers that are standard 2x4, 2x, even, I guess that's a 2x8. Look at the corner boards. In the corner, you've got these original corner posts.
Yeah.
And they've been hollowed out. Okay?
I couldn't believe that. You guys pointed that out, that this, you know, was square.
Yeah, it was square. And so there was a period, probably in the Greek Revival, you know, certainly in the Victorian era, where to have a post sticking into the corner of your room was considered old-fashioned. And so they would have cut that. They did cut that out. And so, Jackson, tell us what you were seeing on the timbers, too, which is cool.
The biggest question I kept asking is, like, where did they put all of the wood that would have been in the timber framed house? Because in every house that we've looked at, everyone repurposes the timbers that they have in their home. And so I was like, where are they? Mm. And then my dad was like, well, look, that's...
Has some adze marks
on it, which is what they would have done to hewn the wood. And so now they have them on the studs. They just sent them off to a sawmill probably nearby. And there, you can see the flat saw marks that are on the one face, and then the other face has the hewing lines.
So there's questions as far as the height of these ceilings, which is pretty tall for New England, right?
With these wide planks.
And you've got wire nails over here, and there's cut nails over there, and so the sawn lath is kind of a later addition. The siding on top of that sheathing over there. It's just, there's a weird mix of stuff going on here that, in my mind, it kind of grounds it in that...
transitional period.
Yeah, well, it grounds it in, I believe the 1774, 1773 date, mm-hmm. but, you know, whatever happened in 1830, and even later.
Yeah,
right?
And then it was moved, right? Because it was on the street, closer to the street, and then this highway off-ramp got built, and it got set back. So that was another opportunity.
See,
for them to change.
I bet
when they would move a home like that, would they redo all the plaster at that point, or they would try to keep it?
They were so good at moving houses.
They would roll them. So you take a bunch of round logs and put them under the house and roll it. Take your ox and pull it, and so the house would stay pretty much exactly the same. Which makes me think maybe they took apart this house and put it back together.
Maybe because of the slope of the property, or
I think there's some taken apart too.
Well, because they were able to take these, like these timbers are hewn at some point. These were hewn.
Yeah.
And so the fact that that is the case and there's no other hewn timbers except for that one beam right there and then the framing of the house.
Outside
that
framing.
Makes me think they took it apart, kept the original framing, and then sent those timbers off to a sawmill and made studs out of them.
You're definitely going to give them a run for money. Another year, this guy again. Like, for my observation, that was your investigation.
Really?
I didn't hear him say, hey, oh, these are huge. Hey, I heard him say, I heard him say, like, no, you ain't right.
Well,
do you want us to air this episode or not? So the windows,
we'll cut it, don't we?
The windows are, you can see this kind of inset thing, maybe where the best place to see it. See, there's old slots here where the weights and pulleys were, okay? So this is a, you know, older frame, but I don't know if it's, because probably in 1774, it wasn't double hung sash, right? You're probably, it was single hung. The bottom sash, if it opened, would have been held open with pegs, wasn't counterbalanced. So these might be 1830?
Yeah, they're definitely. Look at the, you can see the pulley holes. So
no, I know, that's what I was pointing out.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so and square nails, right? And so that's those look like cut nails. They don't look like a wrought nail. And so, you know, typically you're like 1820 is more of a cut nail period before that when this house was built. So, I mean, I would be looking as you take this apart, looking for wrought nails, right? Which are handmade nails and almost using that as a dating tool for siding, for, you know, trim on the outside of these windows.
The wrought nails take us to when? And then it's cut nails?
Pre-1820.
Okay.
Have you had your nail episode yet?
My episode? Yes.
Okay, so, yeah. So when industrialization starts...
Oh, so that is a good decipher for this.
Yeah, 1820 is a really good decipher because, you know, the seeing the cut nail that looks like a cut nail, doesn't look like a wrought nail... It is a good, hey, yeah, that's probably 1830s.
Mm. Originally, you'd get like a nail bar thing. You'd take it home, rot out your nails, and then cut them, and you use those.
In the attic, I think I saw some of those.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that would actually be a great dating tool for this house. You know, old Morris's in those beams, trying to figure out, like, we're looking at, like, this piece. And this is where, you know, I tell the story about looking at the boards and how they were sawn. I mean, so you have circular sawmills, you also have pit sawn mills. And so looking at some of these boards and seeing how they were sawn, I don't know the real history of the sawmills in New England. I know we had a bunch, but when exactly that started, when pit sawing would have stopped, because the U.S. had more sawmills than England did at the time, but that was because of the loss of labor and there's rivers and everything else, and sawmills weren't hard to come about. So,
is it 1840 the year?
Of
sawmills,
I think it's earlier than that. I'd have to look it up.
I don't remember. The Jack Sobin was talking to us about that. Can I ask a question about these nails?
Yeah.
Why would these have been left, and then
trim?
Like, why wouldn't they take these?
That was your trim. Just holding your trim around your window. I think. See, and these.
Because the lath and plaster nails would have come later, because they would have just put the plaster up right there. They would have put the lath on.
Yeah, and even these brads that are holding the lath in are square. Nails. No, they're square. That's a square.
Those
square.
Are cut.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some are and some aren't. Right. I saw some round nails over there. Oh, maybe it's the flooring nails that are round.
Yeah, the flooring nail up there was round. So. Yeah, I mean, right? And so we're sitting there trying to figure it out. And this is what makes it fun. And
that's what's going to be the coolest thing about this place.
I agree.
Be able to get that history in line, and then it's like, oh, they did this.
I think
then,
you're going
to
open stuff up and go, oh. Yeah. Like, you're going to, like, all those additions on the side, just with nails, I bet you can start dating those things when they
come. I got to come take that class. Yeah. I mean, my company is a supporter of North Bennett, awesome. Oldest trade school in America. That's and great. I think it's amazing. And I mentioned I aspire to do that with my kids later on. But
you should.
The things you know in a year time, because I was watching before.
Yeah.
You didn't really know anything.
Nothing. Hands down, nothing. Yeah.
Now, it's really neat to.
I kind of enjoy that time more. But I think this is like, I look greedily or hungrily at these wide plank boards. We just don't see boards like this in Texas for sure. But I mean, even dating the width of the boards would be a good tool for you to start figuring out. But you hear the things we're looking at, the lath on the wall, sawn lath, wide plank boards, you know, the hewn timbers versus the sawn timbers, nails, right? Those are going to be the things I think you're going to try to carry in your mind as you're
molding. Yeah, so some of the mantles, mantles.
Yep, so. Yep. And so I don't
see, or maybe not original, but well, that'll be dated, right? That'll be part of it.
I mean, there's a lot to dig in. There's fun stuff to try to figure out. That trim upstairs with the bigger header over top, you know, I'd be curious to see what the nails are in that, right? Whether those are cut nails or wire nails, because in the arts and crafts period, they did the same thing. They did, you know, plank boards, and then a bigger, heavier timber lintel piece over top. Mm-hmm, You've got a bead on the inside edge of that casing upstairs, so that makes me go, Anyway, fun stuff. It's not. I don't think we can figure out standing around here, but you've got a great building, right? A great historic building.
Thank you.
Let's go check out the barn. So you asked me, like, why do you not think this is old, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I walked up to this and I said, I think this is a new barn, right? He told me it's an old one, so it makes me go, I don't see much here that's original. I mean, from the lanterns to the doors to the corner boards to the rotting wood, just to the pork chop ends on the gable ends. I mean, the gutter, you know, just there's. This has been changed a lot, is in my mind, and you know, he's, you know, we're looking at the brick inside here, and that brick is all new. And he said, David was saying that he thought that the old barn finished where those bricks are, and that made me go, well, I bet this thing was oriented this way, and the gable end was the other way. And so, you know, anyway, it's just, I mean, I don't think they did. I don't think the Dutch, this kind of gambrel roof in this size was typical in 1774. Yeah. If it's part of that same era, which you think it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and so all the material, we'll go upstairs because that's where you can kind of see the framing and stuff. But you asked me how, and I just don't see anything old here.
Well, I know. Yeah, I guess I'm not saying like, isn't that door original? I guess I'm just like, it looks like this barn was here, but they've just done some facelift things to it. And I guess the size, I guess I'm second guessing myself.
Yeah.
Because the size I know
it's at least 100 years old.
Yeah.
Because I have a plan where the home used to be there, and it was actually behind, and it connected in the back, as a lot of agricultural properties did. So you didn't have to, I heard that from you, so you didn't have to go outside. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Sounds nice.
All right, well, let's go upstairs and check that out. So, you know, we're standing here in this barn, and you know, we see the width of this sheathing versus the other ones. We see wire nails. There's a wire nail over there.
That's just the roof has been changed to asphalt.
Well, this one's a big one. I mean, that was part of the framing, I think. Oh, wow. And that was a big old honking nail. But just, I mean, even the way they've cut out with these old sheathing and this new sheathing, you know, it'd just be curious to me. When this thing was built, I would say this is a 20th century barn, like early 1900s, based on this. I mean, there's some bigger timbers in here, but I don't see anything in here that makes me go.
That's where it was. Look. There was a big timber that was framing that space right there.
No, I think that's a chute for hay or something that goes down.
That's a chute for hay right there.
Yeah, I don't see anything like that could have been for oats or something going down to a deal.
I've seen those before in carriage house barns. Oh, cool. Yeah,
they had those at Thistle Hill. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me. This is another one that would be fun to explore and try to figure out. I don't see anything. Well, I haven't seen anything yet that makes me think it's anything earlier than 1890 or 1900. Do you?
No. But, yeah.
Like these, this is probably original, right? To the building? And that's, yeah. And that's sawn?
Circular sawn. You see, yeah. The marks there going in there. But I mean, I don't even see any cut nails in here. And so, which would take it back even earlier. So anyway, it's interesting. It's curious.
Yeah, I want to look at some of these bigger timbers too, because it's really curious what they would have done.
You see, I see these timbers. They're just not.
Maybe. Yeah. See, this one's sawn too.
And that this looks like a marriage mark, though, right here.
I think that's a skill saw mark.
No, but it's curved on the inside. It looks like it's been by a gout, by a, what are that, pull knife.
No, it does. It's true.
But it does look too recent, right?
Yeah.
This is the fun part. This is the mystery.
So... yeah, I just, you know, and here's where we're just trying to figure out, you know, when something was built, when it was not.
Yeah, so like one thought I've had is I'm going to open this up. This will be my design studio.
Cool. Oh, right.
This whole space, it'll be a really neat space. But, you know, they have replaced all the rafters
in that gambrel going up.
So you don't have like the neat, I would have loved to expose those. What would have you seen, like even if this was 1900, like, would have there been collar ties, like timbered mm-hmm. collar ties?
Not or? Timbered.
Okay.
If you go, like, if this is the 1900s, what I would look at is like a William Radford barn book. And he had framing plans and he had other things for barns. So, you know, we were very rural at the turn of the century. Gordon Van Tine had a barn book. Radford had a barn book. Sears had a barn book. And so they were, you know, they were selling them as kits and other things like that. But you can see the framing plans. You can see where they laid out, you know, this is for dairy cows. This is for, you know, horses. This is where you would put your wagons and all that kind of stuff. And so you can dial down pretty far to see how those things would have been built. If you're saying, I just want to set this in 1900. I mean, just some of the decisions they made about where the lighting is on the front and how they, you know, blocked out for the electrical plugs and stuff like that. Are just our little tweaks that I would be getting rid of to try to send it back earlier.
Okay.
It'd be the thing I'd be looking at.
Yeah, cool.
Well, let's go stand out front and we'll kind of wrap this up because this is kind of cobwebby in here.
You know, this is still at least 100 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I see a bungalow form more than I see a Greek Revival form. Yeah, I think the pitch on that, is it the same pitch as that one above?
No.
Yeah, it looks slower.
Shower, yeah.
And so the I guess I look at this and, you know, this is one where I'd be looking at that interior framing, seeing the date on that.
Yeah.
It's you've got a lot of these growths and things going on here. You see how the windows are framed out on this side
differently.
Then how it changes back there. So, I mean, just as you sit here and just stare at it for a while, I bet your eye picks up a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
And just the way they've got the hose spigot coming out, the way they've blocked out for that plug, you know, that lantern's pretty awful. And so it's just,
do you think this
all
is,
things that I would be doing to try to trick the eye.
I mean, you have four different window types here, right?
For the trim or the windows?
For the trim around the windows.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're building some hierarchy into this thing too. Yeah. I think you've got an original form. I don't know whether that L was added later or whether that was part of the original thing. I'd be trying to plug that out.
Yeah,
but personally, if I'm doing this, I'm not going back Greek Revival.
Okay. Simpler to do Georgian or Federal.
Yeah, in fact, what I might do is I might do the back L Greek Revival-y, right? And
where
so
you have that pediment on the back.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. So that you begin to could tell a story of like early Georgian or Georgian house, you know, in the 1830s. We know they moved it. We know they did some stuff. We're going to tell that story this way.
Yeah.
Is I think the way I would approach it.
Because then you're holding true to both realities.
You know, I just think it's a personally, I think it's a better story with Lexington, Minuteman, things
bringing
like
it
that.
Back to the, you know,
but yeah. I love the Greek Revival, and I love the flag. I love all that stuff you're talking about doing. So there's my
okay, cool. Yeah.
input and thought on that.
What do you think of Shutters? Do you think Shutters appropriate, not appropriate?
It's going to get busy with Shutters.
Yeah.
I mean, when you hang a shutter on that thing, there's probably only going to be about, which is fine. I mean, shutters are done so poorly in Texas that I typically would tell people no.
Okay.
But shutters are something.
We got a lot of original.
And I like that whole Minuteman in the upper panel thing. I think it's a fun idea.
Yeah.
I might only do it on, you know, the downstairs or something that. I might. Well, I think it'd look a little bit.
To add hierarchy and.
There's some precedence for that, doing it like selectively.
Yeah. Because you could have paneled lower shutters and louvered upper shutters. As far as the things that they would open in the at night to get airflow through like that.
Interesting.
And so you would do that in bedrooms, but you wouldn't do that on first floors.
Okay.
But the Minuteman cutout, we see it in millwork catalogs in the 1920s. And so if I drove up to the house and you had the Minuteman thing, I would go, that's a 1920s Colonial Revival deal, not a Georgian house, you know, from that period. So, I mean, you've already talked about the inside being something that you might be more contemporary and playful with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't have to make this the Brent, you know, restoration.
Sure.
I love the fact that you want to take it more contemporary and stuff. I think
that's my favorite, the old with the new, really honoring, respecting, and doing, you know, historical renovations correctly.
Yeah.
And then you put something, you know, there that fits with it.
Kind of winking to someone who gets it.
England, they do it quite well because everything's historical there.
Yeah,
so it's some inspiration that I've looked at.
Cool. Yeah. Guys, want to? If you're in New England, if you're in Boston area, how far out do you go?
Kind of within the 128 belt. We're in Boston now, so this is like as far as I wanted to go, and it was tough to find a place with land within the Boston area.
So if you're needing help with design build in Boston area, need to call David.
Thank you, Brent.
And I've been on his website, I've seen his stuff, he does good stuff, and so I think you're in good hands. Someone who really cares about where building's going and cares about, you know, quality. And if you're in the challenge that he's talking about, that we've talked about, of the architect builder friction and everything else that goes on, and designing something that can't be built or designing something that's too expensive, the design build thing ideally solves a lot of that.
We all have a common product, so it has been made a little bit contentious and adversarial, but you know, we're really on the same team, and it's I think you do such an amazing example emulating that, and you know, a lot of your content's for guys like me in the industry, and I appreciate that so much, because you don't have to do it. You could keep all your knowledge to yourself and do just fine, but thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
good stuff here in Boston. We've got a couple things we're doing up here filming, so you'll see some content coming out over the next few weeks of Boston-centric stuff, so it should be fun.
All right, thanks for watching. We'll see you in the next one.
Nice.